treatment of ADHD. Hello, my name is Susan Orban, and I'm coordinator of the Washington County Coalition for Children. In the past 10 years, there's been incredible media concern and public attention surrounding the treatment of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, in children across the United States, including Washington County. We have worked with Dr. Louise Kiesling and Christian Brown from Brown Medical School to provide information about ADHD and the options for treatment. This podcast is intended to introduce parents to some of the considerations related to seeking treatment for a child with ADHD. Christian, can you talk to us about options for parents who have concerns about their child's attention and hyperactivity?
Certainly, Susan. ADHD has received a lot of media attention in the past few years. It is a common concern among parents that their child may be affected with ADHD. The concerns often stem from poor academic achievement, distracted and inattentive behavior, frequent forgetfulness, or loss of important items, and poor relationships between the child and peers, teachers, and parents. In another podcast, we speak about the recommendations for evaluation by a physician. Here, we will speak about the treatment options of a child previously diagnosed with ADHD.
Great, Christian. So what is the goal of ADHD treatment?
Parents are urged to become involved in an open conversation between themselves, their child, and the child's physician. Typically, parents want to improve their child's overall success, especially academic achievement. Success in the classroom can lead to increased self-esteem and improved relationships between the child, parents, peers, and teachers. The child's success is often maximized with a variety of treatment options, including medication and environmental interventions. These treatments are also used in combination. Most medical authorities, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommend medication as the first-line treatment of children with ADHD.
Dr. Kiesling, would you mind sharing some information about these particular medications?
Not at all. In general, these medications help increase certain chemical messengers in the brain called dopamine and norepinephrine. These chemical messengers improve the child's attention and ability to concentrate. The medications are divided into classes, and each class has a different mechanism of improving attention and impulse control and decreasing hyperactivity. The most commonly used class of drugs is called stimulants, and stimulants have been well researched for over 70 years. Included in this category are Ritalin, Metadate, Methylene, Concerta, and Focalin. These medications are all forms of methylphenidate. Other stimulants that include dexedrine, Adderall, dextrostat, and Vyvanase are members of the amphetamine family of drugs.
If these medications are the first choice treatment, how well do they work, Dr. Kiesling?
Very good question. Some studies have indicated that more than 8 out of 10 children, or in a few studies over 9 out of 10, respond positively to medication if the approach to prescribing is systematic. In other words, drug choice, dosage, and schedule should be optimized by the physician until the positive effects on a child's function and success are achieved. Also, the effects of the medication are seen almost immediately. This can lead to drastic positive changes in a child's behavior in as little as 45 minutes.
These are very encouraging statistics, Dr. Kiesling. Are there any side effects to these medications, Christian?
The media has historically portrayed stimulants as unsafe medications. While it is true that stimulants have a variety of side effects, medical authorities have indicated that the use of stimulants is safe and serious adverse events are extremely rare. The potential side effects of stimulants should be considered and discussed between the physician and family before beginning treatment. It is also encouraged for the parents to report side effects experienced by the child to their caring physician. Dr. Kiesling, can you provide specific side effects of the medications and how doctors try to reduce them?
Common side effects include appetite disturbance, sleep disturbance, weight loss and growth stunting, and rebound. Appetite issues can be handled by adding snacks after school and before bed, and ensuring the child eats a balanced breakfast and dinner. With longer-acting medications, these children are often not hungry at lunchtime. Growth stunting only occurs with the failure to gain weight and grow adequately. It is a direct result of insufficient calorie intake and can be prevented by careful monitoring of height and weight, followed by lowering of the dose or changing medications if the child is not maintaining his or her place on the growth curve. Children's growth normally accelerates and decelerates, so one also needs to look at the child's growth curve before beginning treatment in order to evaluate the medication effects fully. Sleep disturbance can be addressed by giving sleep-promoting snacks at bedtime, such as white meat of turkey, milk, yogurt, or ice cream. Occasionally, small doses of melatonin or timing the medication dose to wear off at bedtime may ameliorate the sleep issues. I mentioned earlier that a potential side effect of medication is called rebound. Christian, would you mind defining rebound and addressing how doctors deal with it?
Sure, Dr. Kiesling. Rebound is the exaggeration of ADHD symptoms when an effective dose of medication wears off or is discontinued. It typically manifests as increased irritability and hyperactivity. Increasing the dose or adding a small amount of short-acting medication at the end of the day to slow the wearing off of the drug's effects usually treats rebound.
Are there any less common side effects parents should be on the lookout for?
Absolutely, Susan. Less common side effects of stimulants include irritability, stomach pain, and increased heart rate and blood pressure. All of these side effects can be mitigated by proper management of dosing and timing of doses, as well as appropriate monitoring of a child's vital signs, height, and weight. In fact, physicians treating an ADHD youngster will require a medical visit usually within the first month of starting treatment, followed by visits every 3 months or so for review of a child's health and growth, and monitoring for side effects and response to medication. Another tool to address side effects is called titration. Titration begins by calculating a reasonable dose for the child based on his or her weight. After beginning at this calculated dose, the amount of medication can be adjusted to maximize the benefits for the child and minimize the side effects. Many studies have confirmed the favorable safety profile of stimulants, and these findings were reinforced with research indicating the dramatic positive changes in child behavior.
Are medications other than stimulants ever used to manage ADHD, Dr. Kiesling?
Well, Susan, another medication used to treat ADHD is Strattera, atomoxetine. It is not a stimulant medication and belongs to a class of drugs called NERIs, or norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. These medications are related to a group of drugs called tricyclic antidepressants. Strattera works by increasing the amount of the chemical messenger norepinephrine in the brain. It is an acceptable alternative to stimulants, but is more expensive than stimulant medications. Research has indicated that Strattera is almost as effective as stimulants in treating ADHD symptoms, with more than 6 out of 10 responding positively to the medication. Strattera has a similar side effect profile compared to stimulants, but it has the potential for serious cardiac issues. In light of these issues, Strattera requires close cardiac monitoring with an EKG, a tool that allows a physician to assess the electrical activity and therefore the health of the heart. EKGs will be required when initiating treatment and with changes in doses. Strattera may also potentiate greater weight loss, and this adverse effect is mitigated in many of the same ways as stimulant-induced weight loss is prevented.
Dr. Kiesling, you stated earlier that more than 8 of 10 children respond to stimulants and more than 6 of 10 children to Strattera. That is the majority of children with ADHD, but what about those 1 or 2 children not responding to these medications? Are there any other medication options, Christian?
Occasionally, physicians will use other medications such as clonidine and guanfacine. These medications belong to a class of drugs called alpha-2 adrenergic agonist, and they stimulate specific receptors in the brain. These medications are typically used in conjunction with stimulant medication for children with tic disorders, such as Tourette's syndrome, because they help suppress tics. Guanfacine has recently been formulated into a long-acting form called Intuniv ER, and may also be helpful in children with high impulsivity or children not functioning well on stimulant or Strattera alone. Are there any other medications that you're aware of, Dr. Kiesling?
Rarely, bupropion and other medications may be used in adolescents and adults, but these are typically avoided in pre-adolescent children. Studies have indicated that bupropion increases the potential for seizure in children, but also in adults. Because of side effect profiles and variability in their effectiveness, Physicians reserve these medications as second and third line treatments. It is also very important to know that the diagnosis of ADHD does not exclude other disorders, such as learning disabilities and Tourette syndrome. If a child is not responding to medication therapy, this may indicate that there is an additional underlying disorder. In fact, it is common for them to coexist, prompting physicians to call them comorbid disorders. For example, a learning disorder may occur in up to half of children with ADHD. Some comorbid disorders do not respond to stimulant medications, and they should be addressed by the physician. Your doctor may also seek the help of other physicians with experience regarding ADHD and comorbid conditions, such as developmental behavioral pediatricians, child psychiatrists, or pediatric neurologists.
Thank you for that description of the medications, Dr. Kiesling. Christian, you briefly mentioned earlier that physicians may treat with combination therapy, or in other words, both medication and environmental interventions. Would you mind introducing the techniques considered to be environmental interventions?
Of course. Combination therapy is indeed recommended by many medical authorities, with environmental interventions playing a supporting role to treatment with medication. Studies have shown that combination therapy is helpful in patients who have a suboptimal response to medication alone, and in those children experiencing life stressors such as family conflicts. The environmental interventions used in combination therapy are many and are designed to help modify a child's behavior by changing the physical or social environment. It is important to extend these interventions to both the home and classroom environments. Would you mind explaining the specifics of environmental therapies, Dr. Kiesling?
Of course, Christian. Physicians refer to one option as a sensory diet, and is typically developed by an occupational therapist. For example, instead of a large series of choices, a child may be presented with two choices. Limiting the number of options a child must focus on will help the child remain attentive to the task at hand. Other examples include providing physical activity during exercises requiring prolonged attention, such as stress balls to squeeze in a child's pocket, or a squishy chair seat allowing the child to move in one place. Frequent opportunities to get up and move around should also be afforded, such as being the errand child for the class, or allowing the child to wiggle in place as long as other children are not disturbed. Maintaining a daily schedule and minimizing distractions are other options that are recommended, as well as added time for exams. A classroom buddy system allowing the ADHD youngster to check if he or she has missed a direction or instruction is also recommended. Many more options exist, and these strategies should be individualized to the needs of the child. In fact, when these treatments are tailored to the child, they can improve the common behavioral problems in ADHD children. Studies have indicated, however, that environmental strategies alone do not significantly mitigate the defining symptoms of ADHD, including lack of impulse control, poor attention, and hyperactivity. This is why most medical authorities recommend beginning with medication and using environmental strategies in combination as supportive therapies.
Thank you, Dr. Kiesling and Christian, for this enlightening discussion about the treatment options for ADHD. We encourage parents who are seeking more information to consider listening to the other podcasts offered on this website. Parents can also refer to our recommended reading list for books that address ADHD. For parents who may want to seek treatment for their child, you can contact an appropriate provider through our Children's Behavioral Health Resource Directory. For parents who may want to seek treatment for their child, you can find information about providers on our Children's Behavioral Health Resource Directory. Thank you for listening.